This hour is being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
It's time for 5 on. Leila Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got
5 on it. All right, question number 1 on 5 on it. Does Bears coach Ben Johnson deserve credit for his handling of, as Dan Weider wrote in today's edition of the Chicago Tribune, the recent Caleb Williams, quote, mini rumpus?
Mini rumpus? Yes. Yes, he did. I mean, somebody had to say something about it, and for better or for worse, probably for worse, Ben Johnson was the only one willing to bring anything up about Caleb Williams, the thing that everybody had really gathered for, the thing that we were all breathless for, that we all need to know about. Somebody had to say something, and Ben Johnson did a good job beginning the conversation about it. And, you know, I asked the question of, you know, what do you think about from a distance? And even now, the excerpt saying that his father, Caleb Williams' father, Carl Williams, said that this is where Chicago Bears quarterbacks go to die. What do you think about that? He basically looked straight at me and said, I love it. I love it. I love the challenge. Let's rewrite this thing. This is what it's all about. Great stories. And that's a great answer. I think that this is all of what was written by Seth Wickersham, the book that is coming up. He probably called him for an advanced copy of it, because guess what? Out of all the people involved in this one, this was good for Ben Johnson, because it is intelligence for Ben Johnson. It definitely makes Ben Johnson look even better than he already does, because he wasn't around here for any of it, and he could take all of those notes and all of those pages and reverse it, because guess what? Ben Johnson doesn't know everything about Caleb Williams yet, so for me, that is just needed information on his quarterback. So, yes, he deserves credit for it. I wish the rest of the organization would have acted accordingly as well and given us a little bit more on it. I wish Caleb Williams would have as well. But Ben Johnson gave us just a little bit of a taste until we do get the opportunity to talk to Caleb Williams.
Grody, I very much appreciated Ben hitting this head on, answering questions about it, but also hitting it before his opening statement was finished on Wednesday, and basically acknowledging, hey, I know this is going to come up. I'm going to be the one to bring it up. I think it let a little bit of tension out of the room. You know how those situations can be. We always compare these guys to their predecessors. Matt Eberflus would have made that back and forth as awkward as it possibly could have been. Man. And we would all left that room, Ben, like, what just happened in there? Ben, to his credit, was very forthright about it, very forward about it, gave his thoughts on it. I did think it was interesting when he was asked if he had talked to Caleb about this particular instance. He said, yes, I have. But Caleb's his own man, and he's going to be treated as such. And then ultimately said that they both want to turn the page. The page can't be completely turned until Caleb speaks on this. So while I give Ben a lot of credit, I'm giving him like a 92%, like an A-, because as the head coach of the Chicago Bears, you could have said to somebody, and maybe he did, hey, why don't we get Caleb out in front of this week, and let's get this page turned today. Let's get it turned permanently right now and not let it drag out into June, which it looks like it will. So I give Ben a lot of credit. He still gets an A, but it's just an A-, because I would like to take a little bit more proactiveness in getting it behind
me. I'll back you up on that too, because quite frankly, it's minimal competency. Somebody had to address what was going on. You know, it's a little ridiculous that the rest of it was not addressed, but somebody had to say something about it. If he hadn't said something, then we'd be ripping Ben Johnson, probably justifiably. It would have been a C-.
I do think you and I both agree that the energy of the back and forth in the conversation was exactly the right tone and temperature as it needed to be in there. It was fun. It was, you know, it wasn't like ultra serious, and we got to what we needed to get to, and we moved on.
He took follow-ups on it too, even when we got away from it for a little while to talk about other things, but he was able to come back, and then we were able to ask other players about
it. We got to learn about Daniel Hardy in the middle.
What else we got? 5
on it. Moving on to the Cubs, which Cubs player needs to have a big series to ensure a Cubs series win over the third place Reds?
I'm going to go with Daniel Palencia here.
Oh, I like
Grody.
That. I
want to go to the mound for this particular question, because I think there's a lot riding on how the Cubs stabilize things in a lot of different departments. You've got a guy trying his hand at closing here, right? And he's had mixed results so far, and you just want to start to feel comfortable about that. For the short term anyway, who knows? We might get into July and the Cubs decide, hey, we're going to go buy one. You know, we're going to buy one for the stretch run and try to get this short up for the postseason. But that's the name that popped to the front of mind. I think Ben Brown's another good answer where you're looking for that good start on the weekend. I'll also just give you a little bit of a Matthew Boyd answer just because I've loved how steady he's been for
them.
Dude,
you're taking all the answers. What are you doing over there?
My number one answer is Palencia because you just want to see how this whole experiment evolves.
I love that, and I'll just say I add on the Daniel Palencia conversation. I think it was the first time in maybe ever in my life watching a Cubs game in the, I guess it was the Monday game, that wild Monday game that the Cubs lost to the Marlins 8-7. First time that I've actually ever felt bad for a Cubs closer or a White Sox closer blowing the save, and he did blow it. But he's throwing 101 miles per hour, gets the first two outs, and then the game gets, you know, Hadavi comes out and talks to him. The game gets away from him. So I actually felt awful for him in that moment, and then conversely, felt great for him in the game the other day, 2 days ago, where he saved the damn game.
Right.
So I do like the Palencia answer. I am going to go with, I am going to say, Matt Shaw. Keep
it
going. Now you're going on the road here. You're going to a place which is a hitter's ballpark. Trust me, I was in that ballpark tons of times. It is fun to watch baseball in that ballpark, and the Cubs have had some good times there. But guess what? Matt Shaw, good, been really good since he has come back. And he was on the road, obviously, in Miami. I want to see that continue. I also want to see his defense continue to progress because that's still a little bit – I don't feel completely confident still when balls are hit his way.
But you have a little bit more comfort about the third base position than maybe you had 10 days ago, right? Like, and all of a sudden.
And, Dan, that's why that's my answer, because it's just still so important to get that position right. Wouldn't it be nice to not have to, again, talk about going out and getting a third baseman? I hate that conversation started up. Matt Shaw is back. He needs to have a big series offensively and defensively. Five
on it. The Cubs in a potential future All-Star game at Wrigley Field in 2027 was in the news yesterday thanks to our good friend Bruce Levine. I love Bruce Levine.
He's a great friend. Yeah.
He is the best. Uh-huh. But let's focus on this season. Based on the 50 games the Cubs have played so far, which players deserved to go to this year's All-Star game?
Okay. Pete Crow Armstrong, yes. Kyle Tucker, that is a yes. Who else? You know what, man? I'd have to look at the other shortstops, like what kind of relativity there is. But Dansby Swanson, maybe he is an All-Star. And, is there anybody else here that I'm thinking about? No, that's it. I'm going to go with those three guys. And maybe honorable mention to my guy, Seiya Suzuki.
Depending on what happens in Cincinnati, I'm going to go with Daniel Palencia. No, just kidding. just kidding.
This guy with the Palencia.
I'm glad you brought Suzuki up at the end because I think the entire outfield deserves recognition for what they've done here through the first 2 months of the season. Yeah. Suzuki, I think, is second in the major leagues right now in RBI. This is a guy that has put the ball out of the park at a pretty good rate here through the first 2 months of the season. So you talk about Tucker, PCA, and Seiya, and you're like, okay, like you're dealing with something there. They're all worthy of the recognition they've got. As you know, I was at the first two games of the White Sox series last week. Watching PCA run live is such a spectacle, right? Like, you put one out in the right field and you're like, wait a second, how is he at second base already? Right. Now he's going to it is it's a show. I mean, it's literally a show. The season he's had to this point has been absolutely eye-opening.
Who are we missing?
I think there's one name you guys are definitely missing, and he's at the catcher spot, and his name would be Carson Kelly.
Thought about it.
I mean, he's Babe Ruth at the plate.
I'll tell you what, Bob Tree, I was thinking about it. I was thinking about him in my brain, but I wanted to leave that for you.
Oh, thank you.
Yep, gotcha.
Give me credit for Matt Boyd as well. Yeah, I think he deserves a spot.
I'm with you on that one.
Matt Boyd, 4-2 with a 2.98 ERA. This could be a really fun pitching matchup tonight if they don't hit the hell out of the ball. Boyd against Hunter Green.
Love it. Mm-hmm.
Five on it. In 2024, Bears receiver DJ Moore led the team with 966 receiving yards. Veteran receiver Keenan Allen was second with 744 yards. Rookie receiver Roma Dunze was third with 734 yards. And tight end Cole Kmet was fourth with 474 yards. Which player on Chicago's current roster has a shot at matching Moore's level of production from last season?
Grody, we joked about this earlier in the show. We joked about it before the show. I think we all are waiting for the uptick in offensive production that Ben Johnson is supposed to bring. I think we're all grounded enough to know that it's not going to be 2024 Lions production. By the way, the Lions scored 68 offensive touchdowns during the regular season last year. The Bears have scored 68 offensive touchdowns the last two seasons combined.
Stop it.
So hopefully they can start to climb the ladder of being a offense that puts up really, really recognizable, eye-opening numbers. I think DJ Moore's got the potential to have that year. I also think Roma Dunze is a guy whose year two leap could be really significant. We heard earlier in the spring from Antoine Randall about just the way that Rome is eager to learn. Ben Johnson doubled down on that the other day and said, look, like his maturity level for a second year guy, his ability to handle meetings and walkthroughs and apply teaching to the field is significant. And I got to tell you, there was at least two plays the other day at that OTA practice where Rome caught a pass and it just seemed like there was a little more burst to him. I don't know if he's worked on that at all. Mm. It's obviously the spring. You never want to overemphasize what you're seeing out there, but I think he could become a huge part of this offense very quickly.
That's my answer too. Roma Dunze for sure. And there is nobody for whom Ben Johnson had more enthusiasm. You're right. When we talked to him, I mean, these stories kind of got pushed to the back because of the headline. The headline is the headline. The game is the game. But he lit up when he was asked about Roma Dunze. I mean, I think that like when Ben Johnson came in, we know how much he loved Caleb Williams. I feel like Roma Dunze is one of those guys too that when he watched the tape of his from last year or even his college tape, he absolutely loves this guy. You know, one of the things too in conjunction with that is because a lot of people might want us to say, you know, Colston Loveland, Luther Burden. I'll tell you one thing that bothers the hell out of me, and when we were there the other day, and look, we knew it, and we knew that Colston Loveland wouldn't be practicing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It bugs me so much when rookies begin the season.
Yeah, it's worrisome.
Oh, it's. I mean, we've seen it too many times. Last year, Karan Amagaji missed the offseason. Look what he looked like. He never had a season last year. We brought up this name, I think, on the podcast recently. Calvin's brother, Riley Ridley.
Right, right.
The former fourth-round pick. He goes out there, sprains his ankle in the first few days. That guy never, you know, got his footing, so to speak. And there are many other examples.
Tevin Jenkins
never really recovered. He became a guard.
And then I'll give you the one that always scares you, Kevin White, right? Like, it was like,
yes.
Oh, Kevin's not doing so good. Oh, and then all of a sudden you're in August and you're like, oh, Kevin's got a stress fracture and he might miss his entire rookie season. Sweet.
Yeah, so like I'm staying away from those two guys. I'm worried about Colston Loveland. I'm worried about Luther Burden. Soft tissue issue for Burden. Yes, he did participate in the rookie minicamp, so it's not like he hasn't done anything, and it's not like they can't recover, but that is worrisome to me.
Just puts you behind a little bit.
It does.
All right, we're going to make history here on 5 on It because we're going to have our first ever snake draft here.
Oh, Bears.
On 5 on It.
Is so this all of us here for this?
All of us.
Okay.
So, Mark Grody, you'll go first. Oh, Ray will go last. Okay. So, after Ray picks, then he goes again.
That's... How do you feel about that, Ray? You're last.
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
You're
it's
last.
All right. I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm confident with my draft board is strong.
Your rhymes are on time.
That's
so
right.
So, let's see what we're drafting today. With it being Memorial Day weekend, we need to pick one of each to create the perfect Memorial Day cookout. And in this cookout, we're going to say it's 78 and sunny and beautiful. You need to draft three things. Your first thing, the setting of your cookout. It could be the beach, the pool, lake house, whatever. The second thing you need to draft is one barbecue entree, one thing that you are going to get at the barbecue. And the third thing, you're drafting a side dish. So once again, you're drafting the setting, the barbecue entree, and the side. Mark Grody, you are on the clock.
Okay, so this is the setting, first of all.
It can go any order you want. What is the biggest on your big board?
All right. Biggest on my big board, ladies and gentlemen, is I keep it very simple, ladies and gentlemen. And I would even say this for my favorite food in life. Just a really, really good, juicy, medium rare burger with American cheese on it, little bit of ketchup, and a slice of raw, as my dad would say. That's onion. Just a good slice of raw on that burger. So that is the main barbecue entree for me. A burger.
That's a great 1-1. Dan, you're on the clock.
I'm thrilled that Grody left my 1-1 on the board. I'm going with ribs. This is what you do on Memorial Day. You have some ribs. I hope you're happy with the burger, but we are thrilled to have the ribs available to us at pick two.
How much for just one rib? Anybody know? Look that up. Somebody look that up. How much for just one rib?
Nah.
I'm devastated because you took my 1-1. You took my Ashton Jeanty. Now I have to get Kyle Manungai in the seventh round. My first round pick. This may be off the board, but I'm getting my guy. My setting, I'm going to be at a lake house. I'm going to be at the lake. I'm going to go to my friend's lake house. I'm on the lake. I have a big lawn. I got some beers next to me. Give me the lake house.
All right. I'm confident in my draft board, so I'm going to go entree because most of you guys already went entree. And for my entree, for my barbecue, I like a nice big plate of fish because it's my favorite dish. And I'm going to go.
Plate of fish.
That's right. I'm going to go with salmon, baby.
Okay.
Salmon.
Okay.
I like that.
All right. What do you put on that salmon, Ray? A little lemon up on that? Some pepper?
That's
what do you get? Anything
little
else?
A little lemon, a little pepper. Okay. You know, might do, the spices. You got a couple of different choices here. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. No, I don't.
So you can't really go wrong.
That is the second most controversial fish in this time slot this year.
True. Fishy business.
What can we be talking about? Ray, you're back on the clock.
That's right. So let's see. I'm going to go.
That's right.
That's all right. You guys left my, my setting is still there up for grabs because Robbie's the only one that went setting. So I'm going with the beach.
The beach.
The beach is going to be packed. All right. I need an entree. I'm going with the classic. Just give me a hot dog. I want a hot dog.
What do you put on that hot dog?
Mustard only.
Okay.
Oh, mustard only.
You don't have to pander, dude. It's okay.
No, I think if you put ketchup on it, that's like truly disgusting.
Okay. What about some relish?
Relish I'm fine with. But mustard is the A1. Okay, give me a hot dog.
Okay, all right.
The only thing that makes sense with the ribs that I've already got on my plate is some potato salad. Good potato salad. Ribs and potato salad. I feel great about what I'm doing this weekend here right now.
And no funny stuff with the potato salad. You know what I'm saying? Like some like regular mayonnaise, right?
Yeah.
What else are you putting? Like just that's about it, right?
Like my family growing up, sometimes there'd be a hard-boiled egg or two.
Oh, no, that's good. That's real good.
Let's throw that in there, too.
Love that. My side dish, you ready for this? Seafood salad from Jules. You guys know what I'm talking about? Anybody have that?
What?
It is so it is unbelievable. You get three different containers. Get yourself the big container. Shout out to my brother Brian of the Grody's.
From the Jules.
From the Jules. There is nothing better than that as a classic side dish.
That's a bust right there. That's a bust. That's a bad locker room guy right there. Said seafood.
You guys don't even know. It's a generational deliciousness, though. You guys don't understand.
His window for greatness is so small. But once he's been in the sun for a little bit, like that is.
That was like the Adam Shaheen pick of this draft.
Oh, man. Former second round pick for the Bears.
Yes.
Baby Gronk.
He was like seafood salad at the tight end position.
What did Rob Gronkowski say when it was brought up to him that Adam Shaheen is being referred? He was like, who? He was like literally didn't know who he was, I think. Wasn't that the case? Something
probably.
Like that.
That
should be the case. Where are we right now?
Dan,
you were
on the clock.
Did you pick your setting?
The setting. Oh, I still didn't do the setting.
Yeah, it's a snake draft.
Just a classic deck. Just sitting out on the deck with a big yard and some trees, preferably weeping willows, perhaps, like a weeping willow, and just like a nice big glass of, what's that sparkling water that I like that I discovered?
Topo Chico. Yeah.
See, Dan and I finished these other sentences now, too.
All right. This one's got a little personal touch to me here. For years, we celebrated the memorial of my wife's father at a golf course on Memorial Day weekend. We would play 18 holes of golf, and then we'd have a huge gathering with people eating. And so I'm gonna go greenside or beyond the 18th green at a golf course. We're gonna have the ribs and potato salad there, and we're gonna do it upright.
That's sick, dude. By the way, really, really quick, sorry, Bob Tree. They're the text at the top. That's fine. I hope that they're being serious right now. The 847 informs me there's no S in Jewel. I know.
Wait, what?
You're,
Jules.
You're obviously not from here. There is clearly an S in Jewel. JEWELS.
I mean, it's the Jewel store.
Yes.
You know, the Jewel has ownership of the store.
That's right. So maybe that person just moved here. Maybe you don't know how we do here in Chicago.
Dan has the best board right now. I'm jealous of his board. He got everything I wanted.
Wow. Maybe you two should host the podcast together.
My side dish, you know what? I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going with a fruit. Give me watermelon. Just some slices of watermelon. Yeah. Make sure, you know, quench my thirst. I love a good watermelon.
Okay.
It pairs with the hot dog well.
Yeah. All right.
My side is going to be arroz a la mexicana.
Uh-huh.
So that's some Spanish rice for you, you know, a little tomato, a little garlic, a little onion. And I'll double back to my seasoning for my fish. I've settled it because I was between adobo. I was between Old Bay. I'm going adobo. Goya.
Dobo Goya.
I like it.
That's a draft.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Do we have any more questions, or is that it? We're done?
That's your five.
Dunzo.
What would Alicia's draft board have looked like?
Oh, she was a very healthy eater. She was a very good cook, too. Wonderful.
Seafood salad?
I don't remember if I ever had presented her the seafood salad. I think that was reserved usually for my brother and I. We'd live together for a while, and we'd bust out the grill, get a couple steaks out there, but we had to have a baked potato and that seafood salad right there. When we return here on the Rahimi and Harris Show, Mark Grody and Dan Weider are filling in. Let's talk more about the Cubs. Cubs open up a series with the Reds. I will tell you the most important thing that has happened with the Chicago Cubs in the last 3 days, and we'll also zero in a little bit more on Matt Shaw, who is my most important Cub in the next 3 days. It's all coming up right here on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Here's a drive into the opposite field corner off the bat of Shaw. It's a fair ball. Racing around third, Nico Horner. The relay throw to the plate. Nico slides safe at the plate. RBI double, Matt Shaw.
I mean, it's huge, like, to come back up for my confidence, you know, in general. Obviously, helping me to believe that I can be here and help this team win. And so that's really huge.
That's Cubs third baseman Matt Shaw. Right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's the Rahimi and Harris Show. Mark Grody and Dan Weider are in today for the guys. So we're with you until 2 o'clock today, at which time, looking forward to seeing Spiegel and Holmes. We'll do transition with them a little bit later on. The Chicago Cubs begin a series at the Cincinnati Reds tonight. 5:40 is when the first pitch is scheduled to be thrown by one Hunter Green, the great pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds. Matthew Boyd is on it for the Cubs, who have won two straight games, while the Cincinnati Reds, one game under 500, have lost two straight games. And we were just talking about it, Dan, and our five on it, that it's really nice, super heartening to see Matthew Boyd come back from the minors, get some work done, and not look overmatched at the major league level. Even in the outs that he has made, that's what I'm watching for, because that was the problem when, you know, they were transparent about it, Jed Hoyer and Craig Counsell, that he just looked like he was trying to survive as his time wound down in his first stint in the bigs this year. They figured something out in the minors, which we'll drill down into here in just a little bit. It's just so important that he continues to do what he is doing with the bat and progress with the glove, because if they can get that position right, it's one less thing they have to worry about, as they do legitimately now, 10 games over 500, make their way towards a playoff run for the Cubs this year.
There's no question, and it's not an easy reset to get off to a slow start, to be sent back to AAA, to try to have to find yourself again, and to make real adjustments to what you're doing at the plate. Shaw obviously has done that. You saw what he was doing at the end of the stint in Iowa, just red hot.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, now's
homer,
the time
homer,
to
homer.
Try it again. Yeah. And now you go into Miami and you get five hits in the first three games back. And then you hope to obviously continue that here through this weekend series. To your point about the position, like, if you can get a level of comfort and confidence at third base, now all of a sudden everybody breathes a little bit easier about how well stacked this team is to compete for things that are really meaningful.
Yeah, and I'll give a big thumbs up to the Cubs organization now with two players. And look, Boyd's got a ways to go before we could say, yep, he's on it, he's on track.
He is,
what did I say?
Boyd.
Oh, yeah. They're both Matts. But yes, Matthew Shaw. I'll give credit on him and Pete Crowe Armstrong, because they did the same thing with Pete Crowe Armstrong last year. He needed to go down. Lord, did he need to go back down last year. Whatever they did with him obviously worked. I mean, moved back a little bit in the box, widened that stance a little bit, comes back, he starts to progress at the end of last season, and now look at PCA.
Yeah, I mean, look at him.
And the more people I hear from that are really watching the games, like beat writers, are saying, yeah, there's some legitimacy to that. It's not quite there yet with Matt Shaw, but good for them to have worked on some very specific things. To that end, let's listen to Ron Coomer of the Cubs broadcast booth on what he has seen with Matt Shaw.
Shaw stands deep in the box, right-handed batter, hits out of a little bit of a crouch, and the pitch. Line drive, smoke to right center field. Sanchez goes back. This one's over his head, bounces on the track and over the wall for an automatic double. Nice piece of hitting for Matt Shaw, one out double here in the fifth.
Well, he's been able to really use the other side of the diamond since being called back up, and that's a good thing. He gets this slider down, middle of the plate, doesn't try to hook it, just goes with it. You know, and to me, that means he's letting this ball get deep on him, and then he's able to drive it that way. And that's a good swing by Matt. You know, and to do that, your head has to stay still. I thought that was the biggest key for him going down to the minor leagues, was to correct that problem of his head moving so much towards the pitcher. And he is getting that part settled in a little bit. Leg kick, you know, I know they've shortened that a little bit, but at the end of the day, if your head is moving, you cannot hit in our league. And he is doing a much better job. And, you know, I think he's getting some carryover effect, too, at his third base play. He's done a very nice job since coming back up playing third base.
Sometimes it sounds simple, but it really is the key. You have to see the ball to hit the ball.
Well, at the end of the day, you can look at a guy's swing and have a lot of opinions if somebody's doing some things different. But really, first, the golden rule of hitting is you have to see the ball.
Hap looks at a ball low and outside. It's 1-2.
And what does that mean in the big leagues? That means seeing it out of the pitcher's hand. That means you're going to be able to figure out what the pitch is and then tracking the ball to the barrel of the bat and watching it hit the barrel of the bat.
God, that's so good, because there's so many times where, Dan, we don't know the specifics, the why. Like, why is this guy? And we all kind of guess. And as Coomer said, he put it pretty bluntly there. Ron Coomer, Zach Zabin on the score, talking there about Matt Shaw. That is just so specific about his head moving. And Coomer saying, you can't play in our game at this level if your head is moving. I mean, it's like, I guess it's a it's obviously something fundamental. Certainly not something that I picked up on, though.
Right. And it's always micro, and there's so much muscle memory to all of it, you know. And then all of a sudden, you've got to have results to recreate the confidence. Obviously, Shaw got those at Iowa. He's got those through his first series back up in the bigs, and hopefully you just continue to get the positive reinforcement for some of the changes you've made.
That's a great point too. I give credit to the Cubs organization for getting a couple of these guys right, but I give credit to the student as well, because he was willing to make that change and listen and maybe break some habits, break some.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yes. Like, when you're comfortable with something, and obviously, look, this is a first-round pick. This is a guy who has had heavy-duty success in his baseball life, doing it his way or the way other coaches have taught him, and he's able to, hey, man, you want to survive at this level? Hold still.
Yeah,
hold steady, man. So that's a proactive wow right there. Good on both sides. Here is another. I had a really good talk the other night when I was all alone at Hallis Hall doing a 3-hour solo show at the hall in the NFL Network studio. And I got to talk baseball with Lance Brozdowski of the Marquee Sports Network. And he's so good and so technical. Like, if you're really into that next level conversation, that's what Lance brings. And I asked him as well about what he is seeing with Matt Shaw.
Seems like he's studying the leg kick here. So he basically took the 2-strike leg kick he had when he was up in April and made that his leg kick all the time. And, you know, I mean, we have Cliff Floyd in studio a ton, and I really love talking hitting with him. And he made, like, the first time him and I were watching him, even last year at AAA, we were like, oh, the leg kick's, like, Cliff literally was like, the leg kick's going to go eventually. Just, if you look at the sample of major league hitters who have that big of a leg kick, you literally don't have any. Like, I think the one that comes to mind for me is, like, Zach Meadow from the Angels had one for a bit, but I think even he toned his down. Bo Bichette, when he came up, was similar. Bo Bichette is probably a good comp there. And I just wonder whether it just took time. Like, there's this thing in player development of, like, do you wait for the guy to fail and then make the adjustment, or do you try to preemptively make the adjustment? And it seems like they were comfortable letting him come up and fail and then make the adjustment. And given how good the offense has been, I think you could almost, like, take the hit that you had not playing him, or his production early in the season, and then the offensive production of Birdie and Brujan and Nicky Lopez, all which was well below average. And now you're getting to a point where it's like, okay, if you could project him as like a league average back going forward, even if he's, you know, maybe an average-ish to below average glove at third base, like that fits in the concept of this team.
See, what I think is so interesting about that, again, Lance Brzdowski of the Marquee Sports Network talking about Matt Shaw and the leg kick, which is the thing that is easy, the low-hanging fruit for all of us. Like, you got to tone that down. And it's funny that he put it that way, that, like, you got to wait for the guy to fail before you change it. Because nobody, like, people say, well, why didn't you take care of that beforehand? Well, because he's had success doing
right.
it. Let's see what he can do. I can't remember. It was somebody, there was a guest on the afternoon show, and I wish I could remember who those guys were talking to, Spiegel and Holmes, but that somebody brought up the example of Anthony Iapoche used to be a hitting coach for the Cubs. He was there when Chris Bryant came up, and Chris Bryant, you remember, you know his stance. It's a very uncomfortable looking crouch that he sits in. And somebody said before he even took an at bat at the big league level, "Are you going to fix that? Are you going to fix that crouch?" And actually, I guess I think Iapoche was the minor league instructor at that. "You going to fix that thing?" And he's like, "Are you kidding me?
Right.
It's Chris Bryant. I don't know that he said I'm going to wait till he fails, but I'm not going to mess with his success. If he fails, then maybe we'll start to try to adjust things." Now, Chris Bryant, this is a different story. He didn't seem to be overly willing to adjust to anything, really, as it comes down to it. But I just thought that was really interesting. And the fact that the leg kick had to be adjusted to some degree with Matt Shaw.
Well, look, and you've seen, again, you've seen the progress and the results. And that does take a level of humility from the player to be able to respond to suggestions and to make corrections and then to apply them in a way where you get production. Again, now you've got to sustain this production, obviously. The Cubs will go into a big division series tonight, and you'll try to keep the momentum rolling.
I'll tell you what, I told you that I tease this. The most important thing that has happened for the Chicago Cubs in the last three games, that when they took two out of three from the Miami Marlins, is that Kyle Tucker, 6-for-8 with two home runs over the past two games. And I say that not because I didn't think he was going to get his bleep together, because he's Kyle Tucker and the evidence is in that he's a great player and he'll get his bleep together. But because we were all kind of doing this thing where we're like, what's going on with him? Does he need a day off? Did he hurt himself? Is what's going on in the outfield? Because there were a couple plays in the outfield that I was like, what's going on out there? Why is he not seeing the ball well? What's happening with him? You know, is it? But really, and I point to myself, like, sometimes we lose perspective and we're like, there's this baseball panic that sets in when it is a sport that is so prone to failure and bad moments and slumps because of the long nature of the season. But I think we all just needed to see it.
Yeah.
And now Kyle Tucker is back and he's not resorting to his spring training days.
And you heard from him earlier in the week in Miami just about the confidence getting a boost a little bit, right? And like, okay, now I feel like I'm back in my groove, and that's a big deal. Again, as we talked about, like, this lineup's potent. This lineup is potent, and he's a big part of that. And so when you get him to swing the bat like he has this week, you feel a lot better about where they're going. It's three games now this year that they've banged out 21 hits. Is that right?
I think you're right.
That's insane.
Yeah, they've been. It's really fun to watch. I mean, really, like, we know. I know that there's so much like pitching. There's nothing worse than a team that can't hit, and we've seen enough of that through the years with the Chicago Cubs to have the luxury of crushing the baseball, sort of like they did circa 15, 16, and 17 before it all started to kind of decrescendo out of that, and then Theo Epstein would end his postseason press conference talking about the need to make contact. They've actually gotten back to where they were trying to get to for a long, like really in the first year of Jed Hoyer, where he had contact guys, but not hard hit contact guys necessarily. A couple of things here before we take a break. Had a few people weighing in on our All-Star conversation, including our very own Bruce Levine, who texted me too. Both catchers maybe should be All-Stars. Carson Kelly, we had a couple of people on the text line saying now Miguel Amaya as well.
How do you do that?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. No, not in a million years. And the by the way, my Jewel recommendation had at least one person asking, and that's all.
I saw
that's
two
all
people.
Takes.
I saw people. Two people.
Okay, I was going to say two, but I would have been making it up just to, you know. I like to create straw men. What was the Grody Jewel's recommendation? He only said it once, and I missed it. Yeah, it's the Jewel seafood salad.
Yeah,
just go up to the
describe
counter.
It. You said it's loaded with mayo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's shrimp.
It smells great.
There's shrimp, lobster, crab. I believe imitation forms of it, but somehow, some way, with the right mixture of mayonnaise, it is delicious. And I just guarantee it to people.
You ever put it on bread or
no.
a bun or anything? Nothing
no,
like that.
No funny stuff.
Okay. No funny
stuff.
Business.
Just get it plain. Get it like that. The funny stuff is coming up next, though, because this is going to be a Dan Weider segment for the most part. We were all walking from the Walter Payton Center to Hallis Hall the other day. Dan, Matt Zahn from CBS2 and myself, and somehow we got talking about our high school. Somehow, some way, the three of us all played high school baseball. So we got to talking about cold weather baseball. So we will talk about that. Plus, Dan Weider here is going to spend his weekend basically coaching baseball. So I want to hear about Dan's coaching prowess and more on Weedsy when we return here on the Raheemy and Harris Show with Dan Weider and me, Mark Grody, on The Score.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Look, it's cold, you know, accept it, right?
But it hurts, man. Cubs manager Craig Counsell. Yeah. You're not in the dome anymore. You don't have a roof like you did at Miller Park. It is the Raheemy and Harris Show. Mark Grody and Dan Weider are in. We cover the Bears. We regularly co-host the Take the North podcast. There's an episode up and running right now. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll talk to Brian Baldinger, Baldy, and we're hoping that he brings his breakdown. We're not sure if he's got his breakdown with him, but I would assume that Baldy has his breakdown with him. We'll have more Cubs talk coming up at 125 with Taylor McGregor. But as I was saying before the break, Dan Weider, or myself, and Matt Zahn from Channel 2, we're walking and talking, and like guys do, we like to talk about the old days and our sports prowess and playing the game, and somehow we got to talking about, and you know this man, if you played baseball at any level, well, probably you probably had to play at high school,
yeah, because yeah, the season starts earlier,
yeah, and the velocity starts to go up. It ain't like it was before that. Like it starts to become real baseball. And all three of us, when we brought up the concept of trying to hit a baseball, and if you're not gripping the bat properly, tightly, I guess is the easiest way to put it, and you get that sting, it's like no other. It's like its own unique kind of pain that sort of drills through you. Like I said, it's like getting hit in the ding-ding. It's its own sort of pain that you can't really describe to people.
We're also talking about like 90s technology bats, right? Like,
yes.
And so that there wasn't the shocks absorbent that they may have today. But man, one of the reasons I stopped playing baseball, in addition to my inability to play baseball well,
right,
was because high school baseball weather sucks, man.
It's
like
hard.
It's like you're in March and April, and you get maybe two games that are played in nice weather, and you're like, what are we doing? And to your point, like you take one off the handle in the second inning, and your hands don't stop shaking until you're trying to finish your homework at 10 o'clock that night. You
I
know?
Just want to go, like, go home.
My dad used to call it a bat full of bees, right?
Yeah,
like you're just like, oh my God, like everything is stinging, and that's where we're at. It came up this week because, like, the weather Wednesday was still, you know, like when we were out walking from the Payton Center back to Hallis Hall, it was cold, it was damp. I was worrying about whether our travel team was going to get the game in Wednesday night. Update, we did not get the game in Wednesday night. Had to play it last night. Won last night. Good job.
Nice job.
Patriots,
nice
way to go.
Job.
Way
Let's
to score
go.
Five in the seventh
Let's go,
to
Weezy.
Get the W.
That's my guy.
But that's it. Like, and now we're walking into a weekend. Shout out to all the dads like myself that are going to be heading to a travel baseball tournament this weekend. We will be at the Dalton Hinkle Slugfest in Buffalo
Dalton
Grove.
Dalton Hinkle. He led off for Lou Piniella, I think, in 2008. Dalton Hinkle's going to lead off the game.
But this is in great weather. Like, I think we're topping out at like 61 for the entire weekend. And like,
nice.
we got first pitch on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. I'm sure it ain't going to be warm. I'm sure it ain't going to be warm.
So what will you tell the kids? How will you have them handle the situation? Will you tell them, kids, grip the bat? Or will you
tell them what Craig Counsell said, kids, it's cold, deal with it. Although their coach is a bigger wuss about the cold than anybody, so they're going to have to reassure me. Like, coach, like, stop complaining about it. Like, we're good.
By the way, I want to hear more about your coaching, but to the pain that hurts my freshman year. I only made the baseball team to freshman and sophomore year. I didn't even bother junior. I knew I was overmatched by then. Like, that's like, I went to a large high school, which is Lake Park. Like, I did not have it to, like, I couldn't hit like off speed stuff and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to like sit here and brag about my prowess, but I was good enough to make the team the first 2 years, which I do consider an accomplishment. And for some reason, I was not a fast guy. I was a skinny guy, believe it or not. Not a fast guy. I was like, my thing, I was a singles hitter, basically. Very good, like, contact. Like, I was very, and that's why I always loved like the Mark Graces and the Wade Boggses and the Tony Gwynns. Like, I loved those guys because that was me. Like, right. I can make contact. So I find out, like, the day of, it's a freezing cold day. I think we were playing like in wood, like a Conant or something like that. Freezing cold day, maybe 35, 40 degrees. And for the first time, we get the lineup. And Coach Nelson was like, Grody, you're leading off. I'm like, what? What? Really? You want me to lead off in this stuff? Yeah. So I get up there and I'm leading off. I think I took a ball. Then the second pitch, I take a nice big full swing and just a tiny little tapper in front of the mound. And it could not have hurt my hands more. Yeah. That like the bees came a stinging. I did beat out the play. I did end up at first base. It did go down as a single, but I still, to this moment, to this day, remember the pain that I was feeling that day.
I remember a game at Niles West where the wind was like 45 miles an hour blowing straight in, and it was like impossible to hit a ball in the air to the outfield. Like, the outfielders were playing like two steps onto the grass because they're like, nothing's getting out here today. You know what I mean? Right, and then I remember it died down for a second, and a kid at Niles West hit one, and our center fielder's like, oh crap, that one actually did get out here. Now I got to go chase it, you know? Right? Like,
this is even worse. I got to run now?
But yeah, those are the days, right? And you're just like, man, like, I like summer baseball, warm weather baseball, sunshine and sweat.
It's why even now today, like, I used to, when I was younger, I used to go to Cubs games in April and May. Now I don't dare go to games until June, usually, or when I absolutely know it's going to be super warm out. But Dan, describe your coaching style. Because, you know, Dan, you know, you can be an intense guy.
Yes, I can.
I've seen it full force, for better or for worse. So how do you handle these children? How do you describe your coaching style?
So intense is a good word, but it's not like mean intensity.
You get
like,
those eyes going, those weedy eyes.
You call them the Luther Burden eyes, right? Like, very serious, mean business
Betty
eyes.
Davis
but,
eyes.
But it's a very positive coaching style. I was told after my first year of coaching travel that, like, two of the dads had nicknamed me Ted Lasso.
Wow.
So, like, that was nice to hear. Okay. That, like, at least
it's
it
like
was
the
resonating.
Best compliment to have as
a
coach.
At that time, I had not watched Ted Lasso. I was like, I don't know what that means, but I'll go.
I need to toughen up.
Check that out. I joked with you guys before the show that if you guys mic'd me up for an entire game, you'd be embarrassed to say that you knew me, because I'm just like every pitch I'm into kind of thing. And I've been recognized probably four or five times over the last few years by opposing coaches. And I was like, damn, like, I kind of want to be anonymous out here because I act like kind of a jackass when I'm trying to get a rally started, when I'm trying to energize the boys, when I'm celebrating a double that from a kid that just broke a slump.
Yeah,
you know, it's
you got to. I'm nice to all customer service people because you just never know.
But last night, there were at least three kids, I could probably say four, including my own son, that I had to give the we over me pep talk to. I know you're 0-3 tonight and it's bothering you, but we're in a tie baseball game here in the sixth inning, sports fans. You got to go out there and play your damn position. Otherwise, 12 guys are going to go home unhappy, not just you.
So
you
the
know?
Word of the day is narcissist. Yeah. You cannot be a narcissist if you want to play this game.
We over me. We over me, boys.
Me.
Get it together. It's tied. It's the seventh inning.
Uh-huh. And no symposiums. No symposiums.
Can I give you a quick rundown of the walk-up songs that these kids have requested?
Yeah, you got to go quick, though.
And you guys got to tell me if you know any of these. All right, so we've got Free Promo by Little Baby. I don't know.
Maybe I've heard it, but that doesn't sound familiar.
Teach Me How to Dougie. Sweet Escape. Squabble Up by Kendrick Lamar. Luther by Kendrick Lamar. Mr. Trouble. Hot TV Off by Kendrick Lamar. Crank That. We all know that one. John Cena Anthem, Humble, and I actually like Godzilla by Eminem. That's a good one to get pumped up to.
We're going
to
be all right. I love it. I love it. I may have heard those songs. I don't know them necessarily.
Kendrick Lamar, good with the kiddos. I
know none of them, but they're all into it.
You
I love
know,
Kendrick,
you probably
so know.
You probably know some of the Kendrick Lamar songs.
It's good
songs,
hype music, so that makes sense for baseball. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah. I recognize 80% of those songs. There's a couple on there I'm not sure about.
All right.
I'll never forget being in Los Angeles before a Bears game in 2018 when, what was it? 2018 or 2019, and I heard the song "We're Gonna Be All Right" by Kendrick Lamar booming through the system, and it just sounded so good. And I was using that because we all do this in our imaginations with songs. I'm like, this is a Bears anthem right here. We're gonna be all right. That's the meaning that I'm giving it here. The Bears were not all right, by the way.
Haven't been for a long time.
Baldy and his breakdown are coming up next. Brian Baldinger will join Dan Weeder and me, Mark Grody, next on the Raheemy and Harris Show. Yes.